ॐ ज्ञानातिमरन्धस्य ज्ञाञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम ॐ विष्णुपराय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमाते भक्तिवरान्तस्वामिन् इति नामिने। नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवाणी पश्चरे सतारिणे। मुखं करोति वाचलं पङ्गुं लङ्घयति गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारिणम्। So I can talk a little bit about I only have about 15 minutes, so I joined in 1976 in Amsterdam. I met the devotees on the 4th of November. It was my birthday. I was 21 years old that day, and I met the devotees. And after I met the devotees, the next day I woke up and I gave up everything, smoking, drinking, this and that, and meat eating. Terrible, horrible, all these things I gave up immediately when I woke up next day. And I knew, something really great is going to happen now. It's wonderful, It's wonderful. The first thing I did is went to the grass, to the fields, and watched the cows. Now I became interested in cows all of a sudden. It's true, the cow is holy. And like that. So I had very long hair, and when I met the devotees, I was really intoxicated. I took this hashish from Nepal, from the Himalayas, on my birthday, and I went to that class, and there was a kirtan, and at the end, Lokamata, my god sister, she gave me a simply wonderful. And then next morning I woke up, and my life was completely changed. And then, I started reading a little pamphlet they had, a very small booklet I had, I guess. Was reading that, I saw a picture of Krishna. I thought it was a girl, an Indian girl. I didn't know, but still, Then 1 week later, I just realized I'm missing them. I want to see them again. They are wonderful, And so I went to the road, stuck out my tongue, and immediately a car stopped. Immediately, and brought me 200 kilometers farther. 100 kilometers. And then another truck stopped, and I got on the truck and said, "Where do you want to go?" I said, "To Herengrad 96. I have to be there also," he said. "I have to be there a few houses further, 100 meters further. So get in." So he brought me, I walked 200 meters, ring the bell, Hayeshwara, Prabhu, he opened, and he said, "Oh, welcome, the Gaura Arctic just starts." I didn't know what a Gaura Arctic was, so I went there. And then I said, "Can I stay here?" "Yes, you can stay here." I didn't have anything with me. I think one guilder, which is half a euro, That's all I had. 50 euro cents, and nothing, no sleeping bag, no toothbrush. I just took off, and I went there. And Krishna sent me a taxi, practically. How is it possible that someone drops you in front of a temple, and it's 200 kilometers, he has to be there, he happens to be there. And years later, I thought, Krishna sent me a taxi. Anyway, so then I went to the evening program, and then next morning they woke me up at 4, took an ice-cold, molten ice shower. It was November, it was freezing already, and we had no warm water there. I slept on the wooden floor without a mattress, without a pillow. I did that every day for quite some time. And there were about 10 other brahmacharis sleeping on the floor. And then so then the next morning, we went to Mongol Arctic, and then what to do now after Mongol Arctic? Well, now we chant 16 rounds. I said, "All right." So I chanted 16 rounds. And then sometime later, after some months later, the Bhakta leader, he asked all the Bhaktas, "What do you want to do for Krishna?" One Bhakta said, "I want to become a pujari." And the other Bhakta said, "I want to become a cook." The other Bhakta said, "I want to whatever, you know, they all wanted to do something. Then he came to me and he said, what do you want to do for Krishna? I said, I want to go outside and tell all the people how wonderful this is. And he looked like that and he said, wow. And later he took me aside and he said, you're my best bhakta, you know. Can you imagine something like that, you know? And ever since, I have been like that. I'm enthusiastic about giving Krishna to others. So, and that is actually my connection to Srila Prabhupada. Because I think that is the whole point with Srila Prabhupada. I never met him. I never met him. Because I took initiation. It was the last year. Because November 77. So I joined 76 November. 77 he left his body. And he came to London and Paris. And I couldn't go there. I was a young, new, junior devotee amongst all my other good brothers. There were only Prabhupada disciples. We were all Prabhupada disciples. And also, but I was a junior and I didn't realize what was going on. Prabhupada will leave his body soon. I was too naive, you know. I guess I wasn't completely clear from being stoned yet. I guess, spaced out they call it. Anyway, so then I never met him. And then one day, on that particular day, the temple president came out of his office and he looked devastated. He was shocked because he just received a phone call that Srila Prabhupada left his body. And he happened to walk into me. I was the only person around in the hall. And he said, Srila Prabhupada left his body. Like that, you know. And I said, what? I never met him. And I kept repeating that. I never forget it. I never met him. I never met him. I never met him. I never met him. And then he immediately replied. He said, if you really want to meet him, you will meet him because he is spiritual. He is beyond space and time. Like that. And later on I learned about the Vani principle. The Vapu means to have personal association from the spiritual master, to serve him, to see his body, and to serve him. And the Vani means to just serve his instructions, to follow his instruction. So I had to do it with that, his instruction. But it is also said in the scriptures that the instructions, the Vani, is more important than the Vapu. And so then I had to do it with that. And but still, you know, whenever I hear, nowadays I listen a lot to CDs, of Prabhupada disciples speaking about their experiences, how they associated with Srila Prabhupada. I heard recently that they were really eager to receive his smile, and they were performing austerities and working so hard and hard and hard, like anything, you know, just to receive that one smile of Srila Prabhupada, that he was pleased with them. And when I hear this, you know, my heart really melts and I think, I never got that smell. So the Vapu is also very important. But the wonderful thing is when we listen to other Prabhupada disciples that will come after me, who really had association with Srila Prabhupada after my speech, then you will hear the real nectar. But I wanted to stress that point of Vani a little bit. Actually, I want to say something else. I told Prabhupada, I think tomorrow I'm not going to speak, you know, because I never had Prabhupada's association and I don't feel qualified and I'm too shy, you know, and this and that. But this morning I woke up and I thought, wow, I have a great idea, I've got to tell that to the devotees. And I made some notes. So, actually we found out that Srila Prabhupada is the Senapati. He's the great general of the Sangita movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he is the only Vaishnava who spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. You know. And, you know, there is the verse of the Guru Ashtaka, the last verse. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kutopi. That without the mercy of the spiritual master, one cannot receive the benedictions of Krishna. It's not possible. So what happened is that he is Krishna's mercy personified, and he came and he took over our lives. Because without Srila Prabhupada, there would have been nothing. nothing at all of Krishna consciousness, there would have been no, let me see, our lives and the lives of millions of people in the future would be completely wasted, lost. There would be no Krishna consciousness at all if Prabhupada wouldn't have come. You know. And then, there would be no Krishna consciousness in the West. There would be no Sankirtan Yajna. Lord Chaitanya's mission would be not available for the most fallen souls who want to have the mercy of the Mahavadanyaya, the most beneficial Lord, you know. And there also, there would be no chanting of rounds. There would be no japa, there would be no holy name. You know, there would be no Srimad Bhagavatam. You know. Nasta Prayeshva Padarishu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Rutamashloke Bhakti Bhagavati Nashtiki. Srila Prabhupada spent so many years translating, and that is what he gave to us. He brought with him the Bhagavatam. And by regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering service to the Bhagavat, to Prabhupada, all that is troublesome to the heart becomes practically destroyed. And loving devotional service unto the glorious Lord who is praised with transcendental songs is established as an irrevocable fact. This all could not be possible if Prabhupada couldn't have come. And also there would be no temples. Nothing. Nothing at all. How many beautiful temples are there where we can take shelter? They are none different from Vrindavan. There's morning programs there. Prabhupada created this. And all the parts of the ninefold process of bhakti are integrated. They are there. When we follow Mangalarti, Tulsi Puja, the Nishringa prayers, Guru Puja, Japa, Srimad Bhagavatam class, association with devotees, cleaning the temple, deity worship, everything, taking prasadam, all of this is the ninefold process of bhakti. And there would be no festivals. Srila Prabhupada is the only Vaishnava who brought Lord Jagannath to the whole world. You know, Lord Jagannath only comes once a year out of the Mandir in Puri. But now he comes once a year out of many 100 temples all over the world. And the Rath Yatra parade is everywhere. Can you imagine what a wonderful Vaishnava who's so merciful that he can bring Lord Jagannath to the whole world? You know, it's going on and on, the mercy is flowing on and on and on. So great Srila Prabhupada is. And then there would be no devotees. Can you imagine to live a life without devotees? And impossible. You know, devotees, how wonderful they are. And Niskinchana, Nirmatsara, full of great qualities, full of compassion, not envious, always wish the best for all the living entities. They're humble, they're tolerant, they're very wise, very poetic. And ultimately, there would be no prasadam. You know, okay, no prasadam. So once there was a disciple who asked Srila Prabhupada in the last days, Srila Prabhupada, when you're not there anymore, you know, who should we follow then? Who will replace you when another Sunday? Srila Prabhupada became very silent, very grave for a few moments. And then he said, my spiritual master was not an ordinary spiritual master. He saved me. So, yes, that is, Srila Prabhupada is not ordinary. He saved us all, you know, for many generations to come. So, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada, again, on this wonderful, auspicious occasion of your Vyasa Puja in this year, 2009. And thank you. And please bless me so that I can become your preacher, your fire up preacher. Yes, because that's the essence. Preaching, that's the mood of Prabhupada, and that should be our mood. And that will save us. Okay. Thank you very much.
I didn't know what Guru Padma Prabhu was going to say, but what I had prepared was actually in the same mood, the very same mood as you'll see. And it's almost like he sneaked into my room and was reading my notes.
You didn't do that, did you?
You didn't do that, did you?
Oh, okay.
Anyway. Whenever I'm asked to speak about Srila Prabhupada, I always end up, like Guru Padma, also speaking about myself. But it's only natural. It's not that because if you speak about Krishna, Krishna is there, and you're here, and then you talk about Krishna. But Prabhupada is that link between you and Krishna. So he's when you speak about Prabhupada, you feel close. There's a personal contact. So not that I like talking about myself, and I'm sure the same with anybody else, but I actually hate it. You know, if somebody asks me about my past, like what happened, what did you do, I answer a few questions and then I chop it off. But when I'm talking about my relationship after meeting Prabhupada, then I like speaking. I like the me. After I met Prabhupada and after I met the devotees, and I don't like the me that was before that. Some years ago, I wrote a song. Actually, it was right here in Radadesh, and I called about for Srila Prabhupada, and I called it "When You Changed Us." Also, in the same mood of your talk, exactly the same, and. One of the chorus lines. I'm not going to sing it, it was Srila Prabhupada. We needed you. When would you come at last in Maya's clutches, without so much as a prayer from our darkened past? Misery drew its curtain, but one thing was certain: nothing would ever change us. Stubborn to the core at fantasy's door, then you changed us. And I like that song. There's more to the song, of course, but I like that song because it was from the heart. Because that's really what I felt. I was in the same way. I also had long hair. I had hair down to here, and then and it's changed to this, I was working a factory job in Detroit in a car factory. So almost every night after work there was intoxication. So this just was a natural thing to do, and so that all completely changed. We wanted to talk about illicit sex, of course, was also there. And meat eating, I was such a meat eater, and I was so much into meat eating that I didn't even know what vegetarianism meant. I didn't even know what a vegetarian diet meant. I couldn't imagine someone being vegetarian. When the devotees later told me, we're vegetarian, and someone invited me to the temple and said, enjoy a vegetarian meal. I said, a vegetarian meal? And I was trying to think, what is it, without meat? Okay, so they just sit around and they eat leaves? I didn't know that it meant vegetables and things. I was so stupid. I was so much into meeting. And I said, okay, eating leaves and twigs? Okay, I guess I'll go anyway. So this was only Prabhupada's potency. Only Prabhupada could do this. I mean, I was fiercely, fiercely independent. So nobody could. That's why I wrote that song, because nobody could possibly change me. Not my parents, not my teachers, not my bosses, not the country leaders or anybody. So. it was only Prabhupada who could possibly do this. So, like, even another thing, like, then after being a, then I coming to the temple, then devotees would say things like, devotees were humble, so they would say things like, oh, I'm a nonsense, I'm a, what is the other word, I'm a rascal, I'm a nonsense. And I was also saying that, yeah. And if somebody would have said that to me, like one of my co-workers at, back in Detroit, if they had come up to me and said, you're a nonsense, then my false ego would have been completely shattered, and it would have been like, okay, pal, you want to go outside? You know? This was, you know, Prabhupada made all these, Prabhupada was able to do this. But, so, that's the big, that's what happened. That's what, my life, like, started when I met Prabhupada and when I met the devotees, when I came in contact with Prabhupada and met the devotees. And so, I know I still need to change more. There's still some improvements to be made, but I mean, this is phenomenal that I never could have imagined that that would have happened to me. So anyway, as the story goes, there was a cold, wintry day in Detroit, and I was outside in a line trying to buy tickets for a George Harrison concert, and a Mataji from the Detroit Temple came up and approached me and somehow sold me a Sri Yashopanishad. So that was, she seemed nice. She didn't ask for much money, so I just gave her a couple dollars and took the Sri Yashopanishad. It was interesting enough because it was so different. It was just a picture on the cover of the book, and it was so different, you know. So I started. I took that book to work, and I was in between my pressing the buttons of my press. I had the book Yashopanishad on the press, and as the press was coming down, I was reading Yashopanishad while I was working. That was my first contact. That was my first contact really with Prabhupada, with his words. And in that book, in the very introduction, Prabhupada was saying that expressing the need for a spiritual master, and he even used the word compulsory. He said it's not just a need, but it is compulsory to find a spiritual master and to take shelter of him and I didn't really get what was happening, but I said compulsory to find a spiritual master. So then I was, and he said also that the spiritual master has two qualities, that he has heard from the right source and he's firmly situated in Brahman. So that was a little profound for me, but I thought, wow, that's so this is very strong. Where am I going to find a spiritual master? You know, I didn't understand that it was Srila Prabhupada was fully qualified, but he was talking about finding a spiritual master. So I said, how am I going to find a person like this? But I kept reading it, and then finally I did come to the Miami Temple, and then things started falling into place. Talking to devotees, and then it's Prabhupada is he's the spiritual master who's fully qualified. So then it was a little while later. I got a chance to. I didn't really have association with Prabhupada, but I did get a chance to see him once, and that was at Hare Krishna, the Rath Yatra in New York in 1976. So it wasn't like seeing Prabhupada for the first time wasn't like a big revelation or anything, because I had already accepted him in my heart. I had already accepted him as my spiritual master. So seeing him was just like a little extra treat. But it was very nice. I can always remember, because I only saw him a few times and I only heard a couple classes, but just the first sight of Prabhupada, and walking around the New York temple room chanting japa with the other devotees. And then I got almost to the entrance door of the temple, and then suddenly both doors swung open, and there was Brahmananda Swami and Tamalakrishna Swami walking in with these big sticks. And in front was a little, you know, I thought Prabhupada was really, I was thinking Prabhupada was really tall, you know. So, and then I saw this Indian gentleman just walking in, in front of the line, in front of all these big sticks. And of course, I knew it was, you know, so I immediately offered dandavats. But that was, it was so nice. Imagine that, you know, it only happened once to me, and it means so much. I always think of it, but imagine how nice that is to be just chanting japa, like chanting japa in the Radhadesh temple room here, and then suddenly the door is open, and there's Prabhupada just walking in real quickly, you know, real quickly. He just walked to the front of the altar, and so that was so nice. So I'm just going to say a couple more things. One of the things that really attracted me to Krishna consciousness and Srila Prabhupada was just, of course, the way he spoke about everything. And I mean, he had a different way of talking. I never met anyone who spoke the way Prabhupada did. I mean, said the things that he did. And I was so impressed, because all the people that I knew, all my teachers and all these leaders in America, they just maybe once in a while they'd say something that made sense or something that was good, but the rest of the time, there must be something else. But then here's a person, Prabhupada, who what he's saying is just always, you know, rings a bell, and you know, so everything he said was just eye-opening and heart-opening. But one of the things was the way he spoke about the politicians, you know, and the world leaders. Because when I was growing up, when I was a small boy, I was a little interested in politics, American politics. So I was 13 years old when I thought a good president, President Kennedy, was assassinated. So my parents had voted for him, so naturally I thought he was good, and I thought I watched the debates with Nixon, and I saw that, oh, this guy's much better. I mean, this Nixon is nothing, and this guy is good. So I actually thought he was a good president. And when I was 13 and I heard he was assassinated, and I remember riding home from school on my bicycle, and I was thinking, wow, Kennedy assassinated. I was almost in tears. You know, by the time I got home, I was in tears, because this I thought this was, you know, such a great leader, but he was just killed. But then Prabhupada. Then I joining the movement a few years later. Then I hear Prabhupada saying about all these world leaders. He would always say, these rascals, you know, they're all rascals. And then I realized, yeah, they're all rascals. Even the ones you think are good, they're actually rascals. And I liked very much, one or two more things, I liked very much what Mahaprabhu was reading in the Srinamamrita a couple of days ago. A very strong purport when, Vasudeva is addressing Lord Krishna, and about telling how he knows that Krishna is going to be killing all these demonic leaders, the ones who are posing as leaders but are in actuality demons. And Prabhupada then says in the purport that it's just one asura replacing another asura, and these asuras are so powerful that by hook or crook they capture the government, and then they just mislead all the people. And And then he said, further in the purport, then he said, actually, the only hope, the only Hare Krishna movement is an incarnation of Krishna in the form of the holy name. So, and then he said, a little later, the only hope is the Hare Krishna movement. So even if you just take that one statement of Prabhupada's, that the only hope is the Hare Krishna movement, and then you can realize how great Prabhupada is. That just shows the greatness of Srila Prabhupada, because if the Hare Krishna movement is the only hope for the world, and then who is the one who, like Guru Padma was saying also after he stole my notes, and he stole some of my notes, that Prabhupada is the one who brought the Hare Krishna movement to the West, and he's the one who transplanted it here. And otherwise it was, well, and Bhaktisiddhanta of course did a lot also, but for spreading Krishna consciousness, but somehow it was Srila Prabhupada who was chosen by Krishna to do this work to bring Hare Krishna movement to the West and to really get things going, to really get the Krishna consciousness movement, bring it alive. So, and if this is the only hope is the Hare Krishna movement, then Prabhupada was really our only hope. He was, otherwise there was no hope. I fully agree with what Guru Padma said, that there was nothing else. I mean, imagine a world without Hare Krishna, and without everything that he mentioned, and so without Sri Prabhupada, we continue to be lost and continue to suffer under these asuras. There's one asura and another asura and all these demons. That's not a very bright future. But now the future is bright. It can be very bright if we just remain strong in Krishna consciousness and try to spread it to others, and always remember Srila Prabhupada, what he gave to us. And okay, that's about all I can say. So, thank you very much for listening.
The next speaker is Vishwadatma Prabhu. He's a Belgian devotee. He's not going to speak a whole 15, 20 minutes. He's just going to speak for five or six minutes.
Maybe not in 5 minutes. I didn't speak for about 25 years in public, so it's a little strange. But especially today, I cannot refuse to show my gratitude to my spiritual master when a devotee asked me to speak about him. And of course I didn't meet Srila Prabhupada right away. I first met his representative, and that was Hare Krishna Das, on a musical festival. And the moment, of course, like many people, we're confused, we're not happy, so we're looking for a solution. And some of us may be in the phase that they're ready to receive some more insight and some more knowledge. So anyway, I was looking together with my brother, I being still a karmi, and we were into yoga, all different kinds of yoga. We met the first yogis who came from the Himalaya and who were invited in the yoga center in Antwerp. So we've seen a lot of different disciplines. There were Tantra yogis, there were Hatha yoga, there were different disciplines. Anyway, when I met Hare Krishna, we started a quite heavy discussion for years. Took years, because Hare Krishna, you may know him, he can speak very well, he's very philosophical. So the first obstacle was, I told him, you cannot limit God by saying he's a person. Of course, he just said the other way around. No, if you say that God does not have any personality, then you are limiting God. Still, although I considered myself as a sincere inquirer or looker, seeker for the truth, it took me 2 years to finally agree and said, yes, actually, you're right. So, although the desire is there, it is mainly the purity which is the force. Everybody has desires, and most of the time these desires, they're very selfish. I want this, I want that. So it took me several years anyway, and then at that time the devotees, they were living in the Bethany Street, which was quite shocking, I must say. I'm conditioned as an artist, so I'm very much into harmony and composition, and, you know. So the Bethany Street Temple, which was a converted old garage, was painted in transcendental colors, what they called it. I was terrified. Bright pink, bright yellow, light blue. I mean, I was really shocked. And I had to, for myself, I had to admit I cannot live in this place. I mean, I like the philosophy by now. I was very attracted to the bhajans in the kirtan. And actually, when Hare Krishna or some other devotee, finally it became clear that I could paint also for the books, paint for Srila Prabhupada, I said, this is ideal. I mean, this is whatever I'm dreaming of, painting, chanting. But then when I saw this place, this temple in the Bethany Street, whatever, I cannot come and live here, it's too much. So I waited until they moved to the Heringracht, the next temple, and that's where I joined. And that's where I started to learn many things theoretically, but also practically. There's many things that as a neophyte we have a certain idea of spiritual life. But when we actually commit to practicing the spiritual life, we get a deeper insight, a deeper understanding of why things are not always as we think they should be. And for example, my first idea was that when people dedicate their life 24 hours to yoga, to Krishna, whatever, to spiritual life, then they must be saints. But then the first thing I saw when I entered the temple, I was opening the door, and there was two devotees coming out, beating each other. There was some conflict was there. But in so many ways, we have a very, I had a very romantic and unrealistic idea of spiritual life. And when we really decide to take it up seriously and develop that spiritual life, it's like we become sober. You know, before we were drunk and intoxicated and not seeing clearly. And then when we become purified, the senses become purified, the mind becomes purified, then we get a very, very clear view of what is spiritual life. And it is very astonishing to see that actually the real spiritual life is very, very simple and very, very pure and very nice. Just like I remember Mahavidya, one time we were speaking about imagining how the spiritual world was looking like. And because there's no limits, just like Krishna has no limits. So then as an artist, you're gonna, no limits, no limits. Purple mountains with yellow flowers and the most crazy things you start to concoct and speculate. In my opinion, that's nice, but my neighbor would say that's terrifying. These colors and this landscape and whatever you imagine. So we have all our own ideas, just like Dr. Frog is trying to imagine how big the ocean is first step by step, and that's why we need, it is essential to have a spiritual guide. We need a spiritual master, one who has seen the truth, and then by humbly inquiring we can develop a proper sight. And I met the devotees. Later on I had the great fortune to meet Srila Prabhupada. And again, when I wear a glass, glasses which are colored, then whoever I see passing by, he is colored. So to see Srila Prabhupada as he really is, I mean, just like in any relation between devotees, between mother and children, between lovers, whatever relation is there, some qualifications are needed from both sides. Yes. Oh, my 5 minutes are passed. Okay. The more we come to know Srila Prabhupada, and especially the more we become purified by his guidance, the more we will appreciate Srila Prabhupada. So there's no way, just like imagining Krishna is very hard for us, same way imagining the level of Srila Prabhupada and what Srila Prabhupada did for us, at least I cannot really understand it yet, the full beauty, the richness, the level. I know that Srila Prabhupada is the greatest mercy which came into my life, but I'm sure that the more I go on, the more I'll appreciate, the deeper I will appreciate. And as one last thing, when on the material platform there's a nice book coming out, or a nice movie, or a nice painting, you can enjoy it. But if you see that movie about 5 times or 10 times, then it becomes boring. And in the spiritual life, it's the other way around. When you see Srila Prabhupada or read his books 1 time, it's maybe nice if you're ready for it. But the more you read, the nicer they become, and that will never stop. So today, I want to show my attitude to Srila Prabhupada and to all the assembled devotees. Thank you very much.
Today I wanted to review some of the events in Srila Prabhupada's life. I'm working now on a BBT project. The BBT is going to correct the mistakes in the Srila Prabhupada and Lilamrita. Bhakti Vikas Maharaj made a long list of mistakes. He's had a lot of experience in India. He researched the life of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati for his new book. So he sent the BBT a long list of things that weren't quite right. And my job is to go through them and edit them, and eventually in the next printing of the Lilamrita, these mistakes will be corrected. So I can just mention a few of these, and it's a review actually of some of the main events in Prabhupada's life. His birth. Ganges River flows near the place where Srila Prabhupada was born, and it's known there as the Adi Ganga. So there's actually no problem with that. Prabhupada's mother's parents' home was there in South Calcutta, where he was born. The Ganges flows there. The only change is that now the city of Calcutta has grown so much that what used to be the country south of Calcutta is now South Calcutta. It's all congested. There was a prediction when Prabhupada was born that when the child reached the age of 70, he would cross the ocean and become a great exponent of religion and open 108 temples. That's what the Lilamrita says. But Bhakti Vikas Maharaj questioned this. He said, is there any evidence that the number 108 was mentioned? He said, when I looked in the Vedabase, I found statements by Prabhupada. Here's one of them. All these statements just mentioned many temples. Prabhupada said, In my horoscope, it was declared that after 70th year, I shall go to foreign countries and I shall establish many temples. So we'll look into it. We'll change it to many if there's no actual mention of 108. Prabhupada as a child was known as Kachori Mukhi. As you know, he liked kachori so much. The cooks in the street would sell kachoris. Prabhupada would go there and put them in his pocket. He would buy them and carry them. He'd like to munch on them. It's a spicy vegetable stuffed, fried pastry. And the Lilamrita says it was popular in Bengal. But Bhakti Vikas Maharaj made a point that it's actually not part of the Bengali cuisine. It's part of the Hindi-speaking people's cuisine. There were a lot of Hindi-speaking people from North India living in the area of Calcutta where Prabhupada was raised. That was called the Bara Bazaar area of Calcutta. A lot of Hindis there, and they brought these kachoris. That's how. So we dropped the phrase popular in Bengal or something. I think it was Bengali cuisine. We dropped that part. When Prabhupada was in college, there was a student. The Lilamrita says a student 1 year ahead of Srila Prabhupada, who was a very spirited nationalist. This man's name was Subhas Chandra Bose. Later, you know about him perhaps if you've read the Lilamrita. Bhakti Vikas Maharaj said it's doubtful he was a year ahead because he was born after Abai. He was born on January 23rd. 1897, so that would have been 5 or 6 months later. So that change will be that one student less than a year younger than Abai, instead of in the class ahead. The first time that Srila Prabhupada went to Jagannath Puri, the Lilamrita describes it as a day's journey on the train from Calcutta to Puri. It's about 300 miles, but Bhakti Vikas Maharaj said, there's no trains running during the day from Calcutta to Puri. They're all night trains. Now, they probably were night trains at that time, too. So we took out a day's journey. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he mentioned Bhakti Siddhanta. The Lilamrita describes him as being one of 10 children born to Bhakti Vinod Thakur. That's wrong. Bhakti Vinod Thakur had 13 children. So that will change. He was born with the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck and draped across his chest like a sacred thread worn by Brahmins. Bhakti Vikas Maharaj said, I don't think it is described that his umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck. And anyway, this is not a standard practice in India. It seems to have been introduced by Srila Saraswati Thakur. So we're going to change that to just draped across his chest, the sacred thread. So, here's something that came from ISKCON. When Prabhupada met his spiritual master in Allahabad, the temple president, I said temple president, the Lilamrita also says temple president, that the Mats president. Bhakti Vikas Maharaj says, president is a term imported from ISKCON. It was not used in the Gaudiya Mat, and it may seem inappropriate. The term used was Mataraksha. That means like the leader, the Mat leader. So we'll change that. And let's see, one more. When Prabhupada wrote a poem glorifying his spiritual master, adore, adore ye all the day, blessed than heaven, sweeter than May. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta liked it. He recommended it get published. And the Lilamrita says that Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha, the editor of The Harmonist, dubbed Srila Prabhupada a kavi, a learned poet. But Bhakti Vikas Maharaj points out that he wasn't the editor of the harmonies, but he was the senior most sannyasi in the Gaudiya Math after Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. So we'll change that. So like that, that's my service these days. And I'm meditating on Srila Prabhupada a lot. Thank you very much.
Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristaya Buddhaya Srimati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Pasukatya Deva Sitarana. One of the first times I personally met Srila Prabhupada was in 1969, and Prabhupada was visiting Buffalo. So at that time, of course, to give Prabhupada was the center of the movement, so to give Prabhupada's personal association was normal. It wasn't that people were scammering to get his association. There were very few devotees at that time. So I used to spend sometimes 5, 6, 7 hours a day with Prabhupada sitting there listening to him for a week or more than that, going on the different programs with him. So one thing I noticed is that whatever Prabhupada said personally, because he did give personal instructions also, if you sit there long enough. But whatever he was saying, he also said in his books. It's not that he said something to me that he didn't say also in his books. So sometimes we wonder, you know, what is the value of personal association compared to this Vani and Vapu. Prabhupada stressed Vani, that is, hearing instructions, and after Prabhupada's disappearance, it seems that we stress the Vapu more than the Vani. So, there may be a question why we change from one stress to the next. Well, I guess part of it may be because, to a certain extent, the leadership didn't really hear the Vani clear enough to understand, and therefore it manifests itself into so many problems. Some of the leadership took their position and more or less tried to establish themselves based mainly upon the fact how much vapu they got, how much personal association they got. And they made that the standard of what their level of devotional service was because of all the association they got. On the other hand, Prabhupada didn't want that at all. As a matter of fact, he discouraged it completely. That would mean that those who were doing what Prabhupada emphasized the most, either to themselves personally or in general, for instance, Prabhupada was very much emphatic about how important it was to distribute books. So that meant that those who were distributing books somehow or another got less association with Prabhupada than those who were sannyasis or others who had personal darshan with him. I mean, I personally saw, because even when I had Prabhupada's personal association, I was quite shocked by how sometimes some of my god brothers took that association, how they weren't really aware of who they were dealing with, and therefore they got into problems because of that. And yet still, somehow or another, it switched. The other thing is, the idea that after Prabhupada left, that he was giving less association personally than he gave when he was personally present here. But Prabhupada didn't say that at all. Not only by his Vani, but just as Krishna is present as the deity in the temple, and the deity reveals himself according to our attitude. So Prabhupada is also present in the temple in his Murti form, and he can do anything the deity does. As the deity can walk, and the deity can talk, and the pastime of the Brahman, who had the proper attitude, a devotional attitude, he went to the deity, the young Brahman and the old Brahman. The old Brahman promised the young Brahman that if you, because you rendered me so much service, therefore I'm going to give you my daughter in charity. So the young Brahmin said, no, if I don't believe it because it's improper. I'm a poor Brahmin. I'm illiterate. I'm not a great scholar. Your relatives are going to object. So let's go before the deity. So they went before the Gopal deity, and they told the Gopal deity that you're going to be the witness. So the Gopal deity said, well, okay. So later on, of course, the old Brahmin, when he told his relatives that I'm going to offer my daughter in charity to this younger Brahmin, then his family became very disturbed. His wife said, I'll commit suicide, etc. So then the old Brahmin couldn't really do anything. So then the young Brahmin called a meeting with the townspeople. The old Brahmin's son objected. They reached an agreement that if the deity Gopal comes and acts as a witness, then everything will be clear. So the atheistic son of the old Brahmin agreed, the Brahmin agreed, the townspeople agreed, the young Brahmin agreed, and he went and he told Gopal, you should come in, now you should act as a witness. So Gopal said, well, it's all right, I mean, I am the witness, but maybe it would be better if I went as my four-handed Vishnu form and act as a witness. So the young Brahmin said, no, you're the witness. You shouldn't send someone else. People won't agree. They won't accept it. Only if you come personally. So he said, but I'm a deity. How can I walk? So the young Brahmin said, well, if you can talk, you can surely walk. So Gopal thought, and he said, that makes sense. He said, all right, offer me some rice every day, a mound of rice, but don't look back, and I'll walk with you back to where you came from, which is somewhere in Orissa. So, in that way, the deity walked and acted as the witness, told everyone there that actually the old Brahmin did promise, the younger Brahmin, his daughter, he personally spoke like that. So similarly, Prabhupada could speak, but if we don't think he can speak, if we think he's just a statue, then he'll reciprocate with us. And I think partly, although certainly Prabhupada's personal association was there, mostly it's therefore when Prabhupada is present, even those who had little faith got his association and appreciated it. And Prabhupada was able to, even those who were faithless, reciprocate with them. But now in Prabhupada's deity form, it requires a certain amount of faith to approach him, that he's approachable in that form. So we should emphasize that also, not that Prabhupada's disciples or others, they had Prabhupada's physical association, and now Prabhupada left the planet, and maybe some way or another someone can communicate with him, but that communication is rather restricted. That kind of attitude and philosophy really restricts everyone's relation with Prabhupada. Prabhupada, when he was asked, who's going to take over your movement? And as we know, many of our senior leaders didn't like Prabhupada's responses because they decided that they wanted to take over the movement. But when Prabhupada was asked by that, he said that anyone who follows me, as much as they follow me, they become the next leader. Not that I appoint someone the next leader, Prabhupada told some Indian gentleman. No, that anyone who follows me, in proportion that they follow me, to that extent they become the next leader. So we should become aware of that, that it's not just simply by some personal association. A lot of times people ask me, you know, can you tell some pastimes with Srila Prabhupada? And I'm actually quite reluctant to do that, although I saw Prabhupada in many, many places, many, many times, because I think it's overemphasizing something, which is certainly was sweet. I mean, the most amazing experiences I had, some of the most amazing experiences was with Srila Prabhupada. But to think you can't have those amazing experiences now with Prabhupada means that you'll think also you can't have those same amazing experiences with the whole disciple succession plus Krishna, and it really cuts off people's, you know, actually access to what's actually available. It's a misunderstanding. Prabhupada's even just as available now, but we have to approach Prabhupada in the right way. And we have to create the right mood for that, not to restrict our access to Prabhupada by some misunderstandings. So we'll stop there. Actually, I'm early. Any questions about that? Because I don't think that necessarily it's, you know, it's, to a certain extent, our material motivations definitely block our intelligence. So ignorance is no excuse. On the other hand, if reality is put forward before us, then I think we have to understand and accept that. Even if some of our senior members can't understand it, doesn't mean that we can't understand it. Yes?
Yeah, that was a nice point, Maharaj. I certainly didn't mean to intimate that my limited association with Prabhupada makes me special.
Oh, I didn't. I wasn't referring to anyone in particular.
No, but it's a nice point that everybody has access to Prabhupada. Whoever had some personal association, that's very nice. Memories are very nice. Share some things, but certainly I never feel like
I don't think. I think mostly it's Prabhupada, from my experience, because I dealt with the leadership from the beginning. I was a temple president and in different places. And, you know, we were quite young and immature in so many different ways. I became a temple president when I think I was 19 years old. And I was, you know, I was a temple president for a good number of years, as, you know, 19, 20. And it took me around 10 years to realize the extent of the, you know, the lack of understanding of how to deal with people. But those who were more older than I was, they were like 20 years old instead of 19. And Rupanuga, who was my first temple president, I thought was an old man when I joined. He was 28. I thought he was already, you know, over the hill at that time. So if there was some misunderstanding, when Prabhupada left, you know, I was maybe 26, the planet, and, you know, the person who joined before me, Rupanuga, he joined 2 years before I did. He joined in 66. So I thought he was like, you know, way over, it's way senior to me. So by that time, you know, I was 26 and he was 20, you know, 30 years old. So the amount of maturity and understanding. And, you know, and immediately, you know, the same desires that we had manifest itself in different ways. The difference was is that the leadership utilized their position in a way, maybe for a good motivation. Prabhupada was able to motivate people not so much by order, but mostly by inspiration. And his followers, you know, they didn't have any other way of most of them. They weren't so expert. So some of them, you know, they told people what to do more than they inspired them. And they used Prabhupada as a reference for better or worse. Yes?
Maharaj, in validation of what you said, there's a statement by Prabhupada on the appearance anniversary of his spiritual master. He told his disciples, "My spiritual master can see what you are doing." So we can say the same about Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah, Prabhupada's completely aware. We're not so aware. When we go up to the deity, we may think, oh, there's a nice deity, and the deity's looking at us saying, oh, my lost soul, my lost cowherd boy or cowherd girl, when is he coming back? So we're looking at Prabhupada, and we may see him to different degrees, but he's seeing us completely.
And one other point I should mention is that regarding what I said about the changes, I believe that all the changes will be shown to and reviewed by the author. I didn't mention that.
Yeah, I had some experience dealing with Lilamrita also, which was rather... That's because there were some things I knew personally, and I tried to express them, and it was not received very nicely. Because at that time, even some of our biographies also were trying to emphasize a certain point. So I think some of our history, although it's certainly valid, and it was collected with great, you know, effort, but still the maturity of the devotees was such that it also kind of like obscured certain facts and emphasized different things. Therefore, generally, I mean, Prabhupada wasn't so enthusiastic about even the Leelamrita being there, but because the devotees wanted it, therefore he agreed to it. But I think we have to be aware that as we mature, also the way we look at Prabhupada and his activities will also change. Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.